Hello and welcome to Hot Off the Press. This is the segment where we bring you the latest and greatest in events, literature and new media. This week we are working in collaboration with Sydney Writers Festival, and joining us in the studio is author, critic and editor Fiona Wright.
Hello.
So nice to have you.
It's lovely to be here.
Were there any particular topics that you had bookmarked for yourself to talk about on the Millennial Condition panel?
I'm really excited about that particular panel. I think I'm there because a lot of what I wrote about in The World Was Whole, it's a book about ordinariness in a lot of ways. But while I was writing it, it was slowly revealed to me, because you never know what it is that you're writing about when you start out as much as you think you do. I was writing about as sort of day-to-day texture of my life, I guess, is very different from what from the sort of broader narratives that exist about what our lives are supposed to look like and what's supposed to happen. And a lot of that has to do with insecurity. In my case, it's that part of that is living with chronic illness, but also job insecurity, housing insecurity, and the way these things aren't achievable for my generation in the way that they might have been for the generations that came before us, and how we haven't quite figured out how to think about the alternatives in a kind of useful way yet.
There were a lot of theories about sort of social mobility coming into this new sort of century and coming into the new capitalist era.
Yes.
and a lot of those haven't actually come to pass because the nature of work has changed so much.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm a freelancer, and that means I freelance in several different jobs. So I'm a freelancer and a slashy, I suppose, which is a term that I just love.
I love it too, but can we explain for our listeners who may not be?
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's when you have to put slashes between the different things that you do. So, you know, writer slash editor slash critic slash university sessional lecturer slash copywriter slash, oh God, help me, I don't have any money this fortnight. Can I clean someone's house for them?
yeah, absolutely.
And I think it's sometimes used in a derogatory sense where, like, oh, you know, he's like an artist slash director, as if it's kind of a wanky thing that people are doing. But I think it's also, for a lot of us, just a necessity.
And because of the way that your freelance working life now operates, how does that impact, or how does that contrast, first of all, with the way that you were brought up or the society which you came from?
Yeah, it's funny. There's a few stories I kind of tell about this often, and one which I think made it into the book, or I might have taken it out, I can't remember. When I did my work experience, it's come back a while now, at school, I did it in the costume department at NIDA, and I had a great time because I loved sewing and I love theatre, and I still do both of those things, like dyeing stockings hot pink and making priest collar costumes and things like this. And I remember talking to my mother about how excited I was and how much fun I was having, and she said to me, oh, you know, it's really great, I'm glad you're enjoying it. But you should know that, let's call her Debbie, the woman I was working with, you know, she's 30 years old and she doesn't own her own house. Now, of course, this was years ago and before the kind of current housing market. And what was meant was it was kind of a warning about the precarity of making a living in the arts, which has always been the case. That's not a new thing. But I now find it particularly hilarious because I don't know anyone who's 30 and owns a house, or even kind of imagines that it's something that will ever be a possibility for them. So that's part of it. I also did a journalism degree because all I knew when I finished school was that I was good at writing. The idea, and you know, I was like, I would do journalism because that's a good, solid job that isn't going anywhere, and we're always going to need. And of course, that didn't quite pan out either.
Yeah, it seems kind of ridiculous that we're expected to know what we want to do with our lives
right
out of school.
When you're 18, and I know 18-year-olds are like officially adults, but I don't think that's true. You know, I don't think you'd be I date my adulthood from 27. That's when shit started making sense. But at the same time, we inherit these narratives from the people who go before us that are underpinned by these ideas of how things work. And then when they don't, when those narratives didn't work out, I always thought that there was something wrong with me and something wrong with the way that I was doing it. But it was really hard for me to recognise that these were social pressures and social forces. Society's changed so much so quickly, which, I mean, it always does, but it feels particularly rapid since the internet.
So can you speak a little bit to how those things have changed for you over time.
Yeah. One of the essays I wrote in the book that people really responded to was an essay about share housing. I've been share housing for 11 years now, it turns out. One of the things I really remember was when I moved into my very first share house, one of my friends had also moved at the same time, and she, in her share house, they had a guy who was like 31 or 32. And I can remember us being like, oh my God, he's so old. Imagine still sharing when you're like 32 years old. God, I hope that's not me. Now, but of course, that is me, and that's the reality for almost all of my friends. I'm the first person in my whole family to live in this way. But yeah, I can also remember all through my working career, my grandma asking me when they were going to make me full-time. And I had to explain that, A, there's no they, there's no one.
It's not how freelancing works.
Right. And also, like, full-time, there's none of that either.
And you also talked about in Small Acts of Disappearance about your experience in Colombo in Sri Lanka.
That's right. Yeah, I lived in Colombo. I did a journalism internship. I mean, it was a big contrast to me because it was my first solo trip overseas. And it was also really confronting because I was sick, and I'd been sick for a long time, and my illness affects the way that I eat. Basically, what happened to me was I developed this very rare stomach condition when I was about 19. It's called rumination disorder. My stomach doesn't close properly all of the time. So I was hungry and malnourished all the time, but also seeing people around me for the first time who were hungry and malnourished because of poverty or war or political discrimination or, you know, all of these things that felt much bigger and somehow much more important than what was happening to me. I spent 7 years in treatment, pretty intensive treatment, day program hospitalizations, one inpatient hospitalization. The financial side of this is I figured out as part of a research project that the Butterfly Foundation were doing that I've spent at least $70,000 on my healthcare. And the joke I always make was that if I was able to eat avocado toast, I'd be able to afford a house by now.